Hey there, everybody. Welcome to DJ Breast Cancer. It's Tina Conrad. I am here with a very special guest we've met on Instagram. No kidding. Like, I meet many people on Instagram, but she is I think she's one of like my top fans. She's like the sweetest person alive. I love her. She is an amazing mother, always like so kind and generous about her children. And she is a lover of golden retrievers, which is my favorite breed of dogs too. So welcome, Michelle. So nice to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on your podcast, and your previous speakers were also eloquent in their stories. I hope I can be as eloquent as they were.
Oh,
I've enjoyed your podcast so much.
Oh, well, thank you. And you're a fairly recent, survivor. So maybe go ahead and just give us a little intro into your cancer journey.
Okay, sure. Well, like you, Tina, mine kind of begins with my mother. She was diagnosed over 10 years ago when she turned 70, very early stage. She just had to have a lumpectomy and radiation. But what was what that did is it kind of set the tone for 12 years later when I was diagnosed. I at least knew all the names of the doctors and I was familiar with her team. So I just went with them because of the familiarity, and she loved them. So it's kind of strange how that kind of set the tone for my treatment 12 years later. And so my journey actually begins in February of 2018. I had gone for my yearly OBGYN appointment and had my mammogram and pap smear and everything, and all that came back clear. And he told me at that time I needed to get off birth control because I was just getting too old. And so I did. And it was like in September, I noticed when I got out of the shower one morning, I'll never forget this day. I got out of the shower and my left nipple was like indented, slightly discolored, but the indention was very weird. And I immediately thought, okay, I guess because I went off birth control, maybe the depletion in hormones, was making me saggy. Because I could lift my breast up and that nipple would pop out and it would look normal. So I thought, well, okay, maybe, this has something to do with it. But after a couple of weeks, it's kind of started to weigh on my mind. And I noticed my right side was fine. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea of the estrogen problem, I wasn't buying it anymore.
Yeah.
So I called him back in September and went back in for a formal breast exam, and he couldn't feel a thing. And he looked at it, he said, yep, sometimes this happens. And, but let's do a mammogram. Let's do a diagnostic mammogram just to be sure. And so, the story, you go in for the mammogram and they saw something, which led to the ultrasounds, which led to two biopsies, which was so painful. That was one of the more painful things I had done, was the biopsies. And ultimately, it was about a week and a half after the biopsies, his head nurse called me and said, can you come in? And I knew, they don't ask you to come in for benign results. So we went in, and this was October 24th during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And he at that time said that the growths were very, very small. As a matter of fact, he did his little tip of his little pinky kind of gesture. But ultimately, when I had all the pathology work come back and everything, the growths had infected like a 5-centimeter area in my breast. No one saw them on any scans, anything. No one could feel it. So it was very strange, but we found out, that particular breast, which was just my one, was very dense. The other one wasn't, but this one was. And they, the radiologist was sending me letters that I needed to get an MRI and all this. And this was after I had my double mastectomy. So I was angry. I'm like, that should have been told to me a long time ago, because I got my mammograms every year, clockwork. And So to get those letters, which I literally got for like over a year, was kind of infuriating to me. I expected more from technology. That's been my biggest disappointment. So early on, Randy and I decided for a double message. Randy's my husband of 35 years almost, my high school sweetheart. But anyway, we decided early on that I was going to go for the double mastectomy because I didn't want to go through this again. Mm-hmm. So we had that, and while I'm thinking about it, the growths were classified as HER2 negative and hormone receptive positive. And let's see, so we decided to have the double mastectomy, and that happened that December, December 6th, which was the day after my 54th birthday. And I had air expanders placed in. Have you ever heard of those?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I had, I don't know if they're air expanders, but I definitely have expanders like done at the same time as my mastectomy.
Yeah. These, they're a little bit different. They're expanders, but they don't inject saline in them. Oh. They have this little, they give you a little controller that goes over your breast and it connects to a small CO2 cartridge that's in each expander. And you push this little button and it injects 10 cc's of air. So you could do it at home. I never had to go in to have the, you know, have them expanded.
Yeah.
So those were so hard though. I mean, it was like rocks. I don't know that I would have done that again. But anyway, so I had that done. And then in January, I had 4 infusions of our favorite Adriamycin Cytoxan.
Yep.
Followed with 12 injections of Taxol. And I tolerated chemo relatively well. I know the last guest you spoke to, y'all were talking about how y'all were both really sick from it. I actually did pretty good. Of course, I lost all my hair. I really feel like I drank so much water and Pedialyte. I mean, it was just a constant drinking. And I made myself walk every day, except for the day after chemo. And I kind of feel like that helped me get through those horrible side effects. Although it was still no walk in the park. And I, you know, I feel for anybody going through that. And I tell people it's like being pregnant, but like 1,000 times worse. So you have the nausea kind of yucky feeling.
Yeah.
But then I had cravings.
I did too.
I had cravings for things. I said it was like crack to me. I had to have it, you know.
I did too.
It was flatbread pizza and I wanted broccoli and, you know, spinach.
I was very specific too. Like I had to have a certain kind of pizza and like
yes.
No other would do. Like this Napoli pizza in Woodstock, Illinois, I had to have. And then one time it was KFC mashed potatoes of like all the crazy things. Like I don't even eat KFC. I mean, I like instant mashed potatoes in general, but I don't go to KFC. Like I don't. And so for this to come in my brain and like sit there, you know, and then
yes.
I think another time was a Mexican burrito. And like, I told my husband at like 9 a.m., like I wanted this. And then we were eating cereal at the time. And then I was like, they open at 10:30. So like, we need to like get ready to go. And he's like, oh, like you're serious. And I'm like, yeah, like I need to like go, I need to have this in my belly in like an hour.
It must be something your body needed.
It must be. Who knows?
It must have been. So after that, after I finished with chemo about a month later, I started with radiation and I had 28 regular sessions and 5 boosters. And other than having a really bad blister underneath my arm, I tolerated radiation well. I didn't get tired or sick. So I was thankful for that. And then about a month after I ended radiation, I started on tamoxifen and I'm still on that. And so far, I really don't have any side effects other than some weight gain. I don't have the joint pain or I do have horrible hot flashes, but so far I've done pretty well on that. So I'm thankful about that because I know some of your guests have had it bad.
Yeah. And mine got better over time, but it was pretty bad in the beginning. Like getting into that menopausal state was like, you know, I don't know if my body's fighting it or whatever, but it can be hard to transition into that tamoxifen for sure.
So, and then I had to wait for about a year before they would exchange my expanders, wait a year for the radiated skin to heal itself. And so I had that done this past July. And I will say about 6, maybe 7 weeks after my surgery, that surgery went well, but about 7 weeks after my surgery, I noticed my left side looked firmer, rounder, and higher up in my chest. And so when I went for a checkup with the reconstruction surgeon, she said, yep, you've got something called capsular contraction. And I don't know if your guest have ever had that, but it's basically the body's immune, like it attacks a foreign object, and in my case, the implant, and it tries to protect you from this foreign object. So it ended up being like, it's like a capsule and hard. So my breasts were completely uneven. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was going into an appointment to talk about nipple tattoos turned into a whole different trajectory. And what she told me at that time is that you can live with it. It's, you know, it's not harmful to you. It's uncomfortable, but you can live with it. You could go flat. You could have a deep flap. Or you could have what she recommended and what she said was her most successful surgery, called a latissimus flap. And that's where they take blood supply, muscle, and skin from your back, and they tunnel it underneath your skin, underneath your armpit, to the front. So they cut off a section of skin and replace it with donated flesh from the back. Mm-hmm. I will say, if anybody's considering that, to really look into it, because I'm about 4 weeks out, and it was a very invasive, it was painful. I feel like it was worse than the double mastectomy. Mm-hmm. My husband says he doesn't think it was. It's just that I have forgotten how bad that surgery was. But I don't know. I think it's because you still have feeling in your back, and that's where the surgery was. So, you know, the damage was there. But I've been promised, I've spoken to three ladies, two of which you connected with me with about this, and they have all promised me, you know, in the long run, I'll be happy with it. And I will say, I already feel a lot better. I don't have that hard feeling like the capsular contraction was causing. It feels more like a breast now. So as far as, you know, looking at it that way, it is better.
Yeah.
But it was invasive.
Yeah. And I remember that, you know, one of the flaps, I can't remember which one, honestly, because it's been, you know, almost 8 years now. But I remember them discussing it. But, you know, I was so crazy into my work that, like, they said that there's, you know, such a longer healing process for it. And at that time, I was just like, I just want to get back to work. I want to get back to my normal life. And so I opted not to. But I mean, there are pros and cons to your point. Like, you will have part of you now on your body rather than, you know, this, you know, and it alleviated for you what was, you know, this capsulary part too. So obviously there are pros and cons, but you really touched on it, really, you know, impacting, you know, your back, whether you know it or not, like, you use it every single movement, you know, so it's so impacted by just slight movements, getting up, you know, right, from the couch. Like, it's obviously very impactful. I think you were even saying it's a weird feeling because you still have numbness, you know, now four weeks later.
I do. If I lay down on my back, I have feeling like down past my blade, my back blade back there. And then there's numbness. Mm-hmm. And then the feeling continues like closer to where my kidneys are. So it is a very strange feeling. And I've been told that there will be times, like if I reach for something or if I try to open a jar of something with my left hand, I may actually feel the muscles contract on my breast area because that's where those muscles are at now.
Yeah. The memory of them. Isn't that weird? Like,
that is, I do have one more procedure because they did put a small expander in there And so I will have to go through that, but that will be so much easier. You know, that will be like a little one day thing. So I'll be excited to get that part over with.
Well, good. Well, I know it's been a struggle. It's been a long journey. You know, you went through the whole gamut, you know, chemo, radiation, surgery, new surgery, you know, like it really is a marathon. And I'm sure you can attest to that. So.
Well, I will say too, you know, to some of your did they find they have to have more than just one or two procedures? From what I've learned, this, you know, things go on for a while as far as reconstruction goes. So to just not be alarmed if you have a little bump in the road and they have to go in and do something else. That is, I'm learning, extremely common. And we kind of joked because now I have a pretty good sized scar on my back, and she put it where my bra line is at, but it's a slash. Mm-hmm. And so we joke that since I live in Florida, we can just say, oh, that's a shark bite.
That does sound way more interesting, doesn't it? Than
it does. And so eventually I hope to get tattooed nipples, but that's going to be a while.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on, you know, getting this far. Like, I know it's such a feat. Like to talk a little bit, switching gears a little bit, about your faith and the importance that your faith has brought. Because I know there were times where it wasn't easy. Like, you missed out on some big events. And if you want to go into, you know, those as well, but would love to know your faith journey and kind of how it coincided with your cancer journey. Because there can be times, obviously, where you challenge everything. Like, you know, why is this happening to me? Would just love to know from your perspective, you know, what that faith journey looked like for you.
Okay, yeah, sure. So when I was first diagnosed, like I said, it was at the end of October in 2018. We were right in the middle of getting our daughter ready to get married in January. So there was the showers and the barbecue and all that. And we have always host the big family Thanksgiving here during November. And we were still getting tests. We were still having appointments and all that. So we weren't really sure where I was at as far as treatment. But I was still in that shocked phase. And it was extremely hard to be happy during that time. Mm-hmm. You know, when your daughter's getting married, that's supposed to be, you know, just a joyful time. And, you know, cancer took that from me. And I'm angry about that then. I'm still angry about that. And then, let's see, then another major thing that happened was with our daughter again. She was graduating from college. Her graduation date was like December 7th, and I had my double mastectomy December 6th. Mm-hmm. And so I missed out on that. And I know that that sounds silly, but I had been with our children throughout their whole entire education career. And I was involved, and I was a stay-at-home mother, and I did everything. So I was denied that last little thing. And her dad went and shared everything with me, but I was bitter. You know, mm-hmm. I was growing more resentment as the time went on. But I will tell you, I didn't blame God for those things. I do know that it was reminded to me that in order to be present in the future, I was going to have to miss out on some things now. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way, you know, just it was what it was. But the final straw happened a week after I started my treatments in January. My sister passed away, my younger sister, very unexpectedly. My father found her, and I had the responsibility of telling my mother and my brothers, and I had the task of cleaning out her condo and, you know, by myself. It was horrific to go through somebody's belongings. Mm-hmm. It was just extremely hard, and all this happened literally during my AC treatments. I mean, I couldn't think of a worse time I think I got the lowest I ever got with my weight. And, you know, I really was struggling. I was really, really struggling. And I have a good friend, her name's Michelle, and she's also a 15-year breast cancer survivor herself. She called me after my sister passed away, and she said, Michelle, I'm telling you now that she had witnessed many cancer patients who during treatment are faced with other life challenges, and that I needed to guard my heart from hate, from attack, and, you know, put on my suit of armor, as we've learned about. So I will say, you know, that it was just, I prayed so much, and God provided for me. He did. I look back over that year, and I look back over that specific time frame, and I visualize a blanket over me, through my friends, through my husband Randy, who was with me every step of the way, and my close friends. You know, they helped me through that. They were the hands and feet of God, in my opinion. And, you know, we're not promised a life of free of hardship, but we are promised the strength to see it through. And that's been my mantra, even to this day.
Michelle, it's so beautiful. I'm like tearing up, just the way you describe it and seeing it as a blanket. And you're right. It says in the Bible many times that we're not, you know, we are not free of pain, you know, but God will lead us through those times and give us what we need. And, you know, for you to have this friend who has this wisdom even to help you through, you kind of have to take your circle down a little bit. And like it's hard when you're so used to caring for others, which you've done all of your life. And now you really just have to kind of turn this to taking care of yourself. And, you know, as women, I think we sometimes think it's selfish or whatever. But it's not, it's really like self-preservation and taking care of yourself in these really hard times. And it's a really hard, hard hand that you were dealt. I mean, it's hard enough to go through any one of these things on their own, but to have them all collide in the same space is very extremely hard. So
right. And it literally within 2 months' time, you know, all this happened. A friend of mine, Mizelle, she gave me a book called Jesus Calling by Sarah Young. It is the best daily devotional book. If anybody is looking for a book, I have lived by that thing for almost 2 years now. It spoke to me a lot, you know, just on a regular day, I would look up that day and 9 times out of 10, the wording was directed at me. And I think you yourself have mentioned, you know, to be still. Mm-hmm. And you said to be aware, because I really feel like God's help isn't going to be this obvious person who comes knocking on the door. You know, you have to really look and take in his help. And it could be in the form of a simple daily devotional, or it could be in the form of a prayer group or something you just happen to read or hear. You just have to be aware and cognizant of his messages, because they're rarely ever very obvious, you know, right in front of your face kind of answers. I've not experienced that myself. Mm-hmm. So I was always praying, you know, and asking for his help to come into my heart, to give me peace, understanding, and above all, acceptance, whatever my future is. And he has done that. Maybe not that day, but I have found in time, I have a peace about me. You know, it's well with my soul, is what I tell my kids. It's well with my soul, whatever happens.
Yeah, and I love that as a mantra. I feel that so much. Even at the time of my diagnosis, it was like this sense of peace, but I love that well with my soul. Like that's mm-hmm. a great mantra to live by. It's so beautiful. You described this friend to Michelle, the same name, also a survivor, as a light bearer. And I love that definition too. It was so beautiful. If you want to describe what that means to you.
There's been times where things come up and, you know, again, I think he uses people to deliver messages, and she'll just randomly send me something, you know, a text or a picture of something. And it just adds to my day, and it brings clarity to things. And I know in the Bible, you know, light bearers are people who lead the way for ones who are struggling. And she definitely, I've told her that several times, that she's my light bearer. And I have other friends, you know, who have helped me as well in their own unique ways. And I know a lot of your listeners have friends who they call upon, or they called upon during diagnosis, who helped them. I have three close friends, Connie and Jane, and several other friends who further out.
Yeah.
And they will be your biggest source of inspiration and help.
I love that. And I just recently read an article this week about someone whose mother had breast cancer, and then she herself, within like the same time frame, contracted non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, went through all the treatments, only to have a recurrence like very, very shortly after. And that second time, she kind of described almost as being a gift, because she had been through it, and so she was able more to communicate to her friends what she needed, and it actually inspired her to start like a registry of like things for cancer patients, which is like a beautiful pain to purpose, you know, kind of story. But I do think sometimes it's like also, you know, having, letting those friends in and telling them what, you know, we need from them too, because we, again, as women, we're so used to taking care of ourselves, taking care of our families, you know, we're the organizers of so many things, but there are times where you have to let them in and help you. And I think that that's an important thing for listeners to get across, is that it's okay. It's okay to let people in. It's okay to say like, I need X, Y, and Z, you know, or if someone's asking you for help, like they truly are asking. Sometimes people who haven't been through cancer don't always know the right way to ask it. I agree with that. But if they're asking for help, it's kind of important too to just share what you need. Maybe it's a gift card. Maybe it's, you know, hey, I order from Amazon these, you know, things from a tea, if that would be really helpful for me, whatever it may be. Like, it's okay to be specific and let these people in and let them help you. I remember during my own treatments, you know, a neighbor across the street was a polar vortex winter, like snow every day, like I've never seen. And I grew up in Michigan, but every single day. And this neighbor came over and plowed our driveway. And, you know, my husband was working, I was at home, I can't help with anything, you know? And it was just like, I remember crying in the, like seeing them in the driveway, but it's just these like simple acts, you know, that people can do. And they didn't even ask, they just came over and did it, which was also amazing. But
I think that that's and that's an important thing to say. I had several people who did offer, you know, let me know if you need anything. And sometimes you really don't know what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice. It would be nicer if people just did it.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody says they have to come over and visit or anything. They could just say, hey, I'm bringing it over dinner at 4.
Yep.
If you can't eat it tonight, please put it, you know, in the freezer for tomorrow. So I think it is good to not, you know, to just do.
Yeah.
Just do.
And now I would say in these COVID times, when it's even a little more restrictive, you know, gift cards, you know, maybe it's gift cards to Walgreens, gift cards to the grocery store, gift cards to Panera, gift cards to places that deliver, you know, all of those are very helpful tactical things that, you know, people can do to help one another in these times. So thank you for sharing that. That's so awesome. And I will put the link to that book, Jesus Calling. I love that. I too, actually, who my whole podcast is dedicated to, my friend Sandy Clausen from Support Group, gave me a devotional book by day. And you're right, like it's amazing how many times you open that page and it relates to what you're doing. Or I've gone for a run in a podcast by Craig Rochelle, who has Life Church. It's like exactly the message I needed to hear, you know, for that day. And it's just, you like just almost are taken aback, like, and you get like the shivers, because it's just like, how does God know, you know, that this is what I needed today?
Yes. That's how he does it.
I love it. I would love to know from you, I've been asking this whole series on faith about Bible quotes that are meaningful to you, and would love to know. I think you were so great. You had some even, you know, for different occasions. And so would love to know what your favorite Bible verses are and why.
Well, let's see. He promises me strength through my trials in John 16:33, which declares, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world." To me, this verse is my reality. You know, to live thinking you won't have trouble in life is unrealistic, but to know you can get strength is so comforting for me. Whenever I'm ridden with anxiety and worry, and I've been to, you know, really go down that rabbit hole, mm-hmm. I remember Matthew 6:25. It states, "Do not worry about your life. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life?" And this is, to me, this is mirrored in the saying that I keep reminding myself, that no amount of guilt can change your past, and no amount of anxiety can change the future. So I say that to myself almost every day. And lastly, I love Jeremiah 29:11, which states, "For surely I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, to give you a future with hope." And I think you've mentioned that one before too.
Yeah.
And I love that one because there's no promises here of a long life, mm-hmm. and there's no promises of a life without difficulty, but there's the promise of hope. And I love that.
I love that. I think that one, you know, that's my favorite verse for yeah. multiple reasons. And there are a lot of layers to that one. And I love your view of that. You know, for me, it was also the part about not punishing you and seeing God, not as a punitive God, but as like a heavenly father and loving me no matter what. And that cancer wasn't a punishment, but yet, you know, there was purpose in it. And I think there is a hope, you know, in a cancer diagnosis, that you can see the world in a brighter, you know, light and in a better view than maybe you came into it. So thank you for sharing those.
Yeah, and I think I tried to remember that, you know, Tina, we live in this world with fragile bodies. I don't feel, personally, it's just my own view, I don't feel like God gives anybody these diseases or cancer or all the many diseases or breaks their arm or get in a car accident. It's the fragile life we live. Mm-hmm. You know, humans, plants, animals, we all have things that happen to us. And so I've never taken this as God gave this to me. You know, he says, "I gave you this life, and in this life, you'll have difficulties. You'll have joys." I don't want to just say difficulties. There's so much joy. But he never promised, you know, that we would have a perfect life. It's just, yeah, we're just human, and we have these fragile bodies.
And we live in an imperfect world, you know, a world with sin. And I think, you know, he acknowledges that too, and sent, you know, his son. So I think that that's very beautiful too. So thank you for sharing those. Those are all so beautiful. And I agree. I think, you know, even in these COVID times, I tend to now see God more as, you know, the instilling in the doctors and in the vaccines. And I see him more on the helpful side rather than the punishment side. You know, I think that's the sinful world we live in, and it's an imperfect world, you know, but I turn to him in all times. And I think that that's reading more into scripture lately, like that is what he wants us to do, not to turn to him just in times of despair and in times of hardship, but really to thank him every day, to thank him when it's bad, to thank him when it's good, you know, and to truly just give thanks. And so that's more what I'm trying to do this year, is to not ask him for things for my life to go the way I want it to go, but to be open to like his wishes and just be thankful for, you know, every single blessing that I receive.
Oh, yes, I agree. And talking about my daughter's wedding, I will tell you, like I said, she got married January 13th. So this is after all that pre-chemo appointments and surgeries and all this. And so by the time her wedding rolled around, we had a better idea of what was going to happen. We had a plan. I knew I was going to have to go through chemo. And, you know, this is like just 5 weeks after my surgery. So it was still very fresh. I was still wearing that horrible compression bra. But I prayed so authentically and so deeply to just enjoy her wedding, to just put everything to the side and please let me just enjoy this weekend. And I did. That wedding was perfect. I had the best time. I laughed and I smiled. And I think part of it is he did give me the strength to go through, but he also wants us to do our part. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want us to sit around and, you know, he wants us to put some effort into also, you know, enjoying the moment as best we can.
Oh, I love that. And you'll have to share some pictures from that wedding too. So when we post this episode, everyone can see how beautiful you are, how beautiful your daughter is.
I tell you, it was funny because whenever the makeup artist came to the house to get all the girls ready and she was getting me ready, I was really paying attention. I was like, what false eyelashes do you use? Because I knew around the corner I was going to have to use false eyelashes. And what kind of glue do you use? And I remember even preparing in the middle of all that joy, I was preparing and for myself.
Yeah.
For what I knew was about to come around the corner.
Oh. Well, you are such a worrier. As you know, because you've been such a faithful listener yourself of the DJ Breast Cancer podcast, I ask everyone for a Tina tip. And maybe you have more than one, and that's cool too. But would love to know, what is some advice, and you've given a lot of advice throughout this whole show, but what is like the last thing, you know, things that you want to tell the listeners in terms of, you know, going through hardship that you have gone through?
Well, I would tell you to the newly diagnosed, try really hard to surround yourself with survivors who are further out, like past treatment and all that, because they will give you more inspirational information and encouragement than anything you find, you know, in the books or the pamphlets that you're given. To those undergoing treatment, you know, hang in there, because that treatment will end. There is an end to the extensive chemo treatment or radiation and everything. And actually, you're going to find that this is the time where you almost feel your safest, because you're monitored closely. You've got weekly appointments or biweekly appointments, and there's lots of activity. At the end, when they kind of set you free, you know, until that we see you in 3 months, that's when things kind of get very trying, and you really do have to dig deep, and you really have to start putting on your armor and really start praying and do your research, because you kind of feel vulnerable at that point. You don't feel so protected, and I still feel that way.
Yeah, I think that is amazing advice. I too learned so much. She was a guest on my podcast, Ronnie O'Donnell. But she was like, she was a few months ahead of me, like maybe 3 or 6. I can't, you know, remember the exact time, but it was just so amazing, the practical tips that she would give me, because she had kind of been through it, but she also wasn't like right in it either, where like it was more like this practical sisterly kind of advice, you know, that she would give me. And it was so amazing. And I appreciate it still to this day. And I love, like your tip on, you know, I talk with so many other survivors. I'm really curious now more into this like life after cancer, because there's so much discussed about the cancer journey, right? So the chemo, the radiation, the double mastectomy surgeries, you know, great tips, great whatever. But then you're right, they just kind of let you into the pasture and they're like, hey, go be free, go live your life. And it's like, but what am I supposed to do? You know, and it really is, you know, this let go and let God kind of moment, you know, that you do have to kind of build up that trust again, trust in your own body that it's okay. And it does, it takes some time, and it's not an easy process to make that hurdle into this life after cancer land.
It's not. And there's a life coach who I follow, and she told me a couple of things that have really helped me in life after cancer. And she said, when you know, you start to feel anxious and everything, one thing to keep in mind is that just know in your heart that you've done everything medically you possibly can do with whatever treatment is currently recommended, whatever the protocol is, that you've given it your all. And you've given, you know, science that, and you're going forward, you're exercising, you're taking your tamoxifen or whatever, you know, follow-up drugs you're taking, you're limiting your alcohol. And beyond that, you really do have to hand it over to your faith. Whatever higher being you believe in, you really have to start relying more on that. Mm-hmm. And she also told me another thing that was really interesting is if, you know, you have recurrence or progression, to keep in mind, you didn't fail. Science failed you.
Hmm. That's
she
really...
just is full of all these little interesting little things. And she also has taught me that, you know, your mind, when you start getting really anxious, it's getting anxious over thoughts. And that's just what they are. They're thoughts. It's not actually circumstances. And that, just to remember, thoughts really can't hurt you. They can't physically hurt you. You know, they're in your mind. And if you can recognize that they're just thoughts, it's not real, you know, it's not concrete evidence of something, you know, you can maybe take some of the sting out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful. Sometimes it is just this like mindset shift, you know, and I think that that's beautiful words, and I agree. So thank you, Michelle, for sharing your brave story. I love hearing from you. Is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners today?
The only thing, there's just one more thing I'd like to share. Whenever I made a terrible mistake in the beginning, or after my treatment, I started to try to find support from people exactly like you. And I would go online and I would search probably not the best hashtag key phrases, I guess you call it. I was searching things like cancer, you know, breast cancer. And what would pop up would be a lot of, you know, beautifully bald-headed ladies in the middle of treatment. And I wanted to look for inspiration for beyond cancer mm-hmm. treatment. So I highly recommend, if you are searching, to search for like breast cancer survivor or cancer thriver or survivor thriver. Those kinds of hashtags may lead you, like with me, it led me to you. It led me to your DJ Breast Cancer podcast. And then from there, and I think you mentioned this several times, go to that person's like Instagram page and see who they follow. Because you've got a lot of great inspirational followers mm-hmm. and tag into them.
I love that. And you make me think about like the advice that I give too. So thank you. Like it really, I think I can be more specific too in the advice that I give. I do think that there is something to be said about breast cancer survivor and putting that together. Because I have usually told people to search breast cancer. And to your point, you know, sometimes you see images, you know, that maybe you're just getting a diagnosis and you're not quite ready to see, maybe you are, maybe you aren't, but I do think it is important to just understand that, you know, sometimes the more specific you are, it could lead you to different things that you're looking for. And sometimes people don't know what they're looking for yet, you know, at this time. So, so thank you for sharing that.
And you do have to be careful because it can lead you to, at least it did with me, lead me to triggers. You know, if you're not careful, you may end up on a website or a page or a person's profile who maybe has passed on. And that sends me down the rabbit hole. But I think I've gotten to a point where I have my solid sources like yours, like your Instagram page. I love going through to see, you know, you are so good about sharing people's birthdays and statuses of people, and I'll click on them and follow them, and they're awesome. So I have found an online community I had no idea existed. I mean, it's been great.
And I think I connected you too with Laura Carfang's support group too, which is just such a really great, you know, they're more into the details of like the actual what's happening. And sometimes that's what you need too. So, you know, I strongly support everyone, whatever form of support looks like for you, and it can look different for everybody. You know, some people love the breasties, some people love, you know, a little bit more intimate. Maybe they want just something, you know, in Facebook where they feel it's more private. But there is a support group for you. And if you don't find that right connection, it's kind of like maybe a blind date, you know, like don't give it up, you know, don't hang up your hat, like just keep looking. I think that, you know, there's support for everyone, so don't get discouraged. So
yeah, Laura's page is really, you know, if anybody's interested to check her page out, I think it's called, what is it called? I can't remember what it's called.
Surviving Breast Cancer, I think it's.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's got all kinds of great podcasts that deal with specifics on the breast cancer journey.
Yes. She is very detailed and I love her for that. I think there's, you know, a lot of different podcasters and we kind of bring different, you know, things to the table. And I love that, you know, so I love all my fellow, you know, podcast friends. Well, thank you, Michelle. It's awesome. I'm going to link to Laura's group too, so people can see that in the show notes, but it's been so amazing, Michelle, like being part of your journey, seeing you kind of come across this other side, and just seeing you kind of like, I think I've seen your load like lighten a little, you know, over the past couple months. And I think that is the power of support. And I think that that's been so amazing. And I just wish you all the best. Get back to those golden retrievers. A grandbaby, isn't there a grandbaby too?
Yes, there is. Our first baby is due in June. So we have three almost grown children. Our third one is still in college. And yes, we have our first grandbaby due end of June. So I'm always thankful I am able to witness that. And I've joked that I think I may be divorced in a year because I go online and those Baby Gap and Old Navy. Oh boy.
get the online cart going, but yeah. Oh, baby clothes. They're way too cute. I hear you. So thank you so much, Michelle. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Tina.
Take care.
Thank you.